We're doing Ein Yaakov. We're up to page Chaf Zayin in the standard editions, which is page Nun Vav in the Talmud Tractate Shabbos. And we're at the end of the fifth chapter of Tractate Shabbat. David HaMelech had fled when his son Avshalom led a rebellion against him. As he was running away, he had reason to hope that Jonathan, Yonatan's son, would come with him and help him out. Yonatan had a son, Ishbosheth, Mephibosheth, that David had helped. David had personally brought him to his palace and taken good care of him. And now when David was on the run, he anticipated that Mephibosheth would come along with him. As he's running, Mephibosheth's slave shows up with camels and donkeys laden with goods, and he tells David a lie. What really happened was Mephibosheth had told the slave Tziva, prepare the animals so that we can bring King David what he needs and join him and help him out. What the slave does is he runs out to David with those animals and the food and the drink, and he tells David, I came here with all of this for you because my master intends to wait it out. He's hoping you, your son, will get killed in this civil war, and then he will be able to reclaim the throne that was actually his grandfather, King Saul. And David believes that Lashon Hara. And as a result of that, David is punished, that his kingdom is ultimately divided. Just as when David returns, Mephibosheth comes to greet him, and David asks him, why didn't you come with me? And Mephibosheth says, I tried, but my servant, he tricked me and made it impossible for me to come. You know I'm a cripple. You know I can't come on my own. And the servant tricked me. He took everything that I had set up to come, and he lied to you. And David says, well, I'm not sure you're telling the truth, so we're going to do 50-50. Half of what you own is going to come back to you, but half is going to the slave. Initially, David had told the slave he would have everything that Mephibosheth owned. Now that he hears Mephibosheth's side of the story, he says, I'm not sure, we're doing half-half. To which Mephibosheth says, now that you've come back in peace, he could have everything so long as you came back in peace. And our sages say, why? Why did he say that? What he was really saying is, you came back in peace. Obviously, it's my bad fortune that you came back in peace. And my argument isn't with you. My argument is with God that brought you back in peace. And look at what you're doing to me. So he answers David in an angry way. Some of the commentaries say that when David said we're going to do 50-50, David was waiting to hear Mephibosheth's response. And when he heard Mephibosheth argue back that way, so then he said, okay, I did correctly. And they say it was a test. He wanted to see what Mephibosheth would say when David says something that he's displeased with. So we have two interpretations as to whether what David did was correct, because he saw Mephibosheth seemed to be in mourning when he returned, and Mephibosheth ultimately answered him the way he did. And the other opinion says no, that David did incorrectly. He accepted Lashon Hara, and because he believed the Lashon Hara, that's why he ultimately made a mistake. He ruled that the wealth of Mephibosheth would be divided, and then a heavenly voice came out and said, you're taking half his wealth and giving to the service, to the servant, I'm taking half your kingdom and giving it to your son's servant, to Yerovam ben Nevat. And that's what that's where we left off.
That's a very hard muscle to understand, because you know it's not just anybody; it's this trusted servant of this other guy, and he's also a loyal subject of yours. You know, like when Mordecai told. In the palace that there was a plot against the king, and he, you know, that was a good thing, and he heard them conspiring, and it's good that the king believed them. I mean, I think it's tough, right, King David? It's not, I don't say it's right, I don't know what the answer is, but it's not so easy in that sense. You know, when you hear Lashon Hara at some coffee shop in the street, it's one thing. But this supposedly loyal subject is a trusted servant of this guy. If he's telling you this, now he makes a weird decision. In a way, now he's got both of them, you know, to worry about. Because one of them is clearly disloyal. And he's keeping them both.
It's worth noting that the Jerusalem Talmud and the Midrash Tanhuma tell us that in King David's time, when David would go to war, so then they would suffer casualties. And the reason was that there was Lashon Hara in David's camp. People were saying Lashon Hara about one another, and that's why David, when he went to war, would suffer casualties, even though people were very pious. And the commentaries, some of the commentaries say that that's connected to what's going on here, that David also accepted Lashon Hara over here. So a heavenly voice came out and said, "You're quarrelsome, and you're the grandson of someone who's quarrelsome, because your grandfather Saul, when it came time to destroy Amalek, he started arguing with the mitzvah. He started saying, well, maybe there's a logic here why it should be this way, why we should have compassion over the innocent civilians, even though the prophet had told him to go all out against Amalek. So by the same token, you're also being quarrelsome with David." And then Rav says that when David said, "You'll divide it," a heavenly voice came out and said, "The kingdom will be divided." Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, and this is where we left off. Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, "Ilmale lo kibel David Lashon Hara, had David not accepted Lashon Hara, lo nechleka malchut beit David, the kingdom would not have been divided. V'lavdu Yisrael avdat kochavim." Now when the kingdom was divided, Yeravam ben Nevat led them towards idol worship. Idol worship caused that it was decreed they would be exiled from the land. Had David not accepted Lashon Hara, the kingdom would not have been divided. V'lavdu Yisrael avdat kochavim, the Jewish people would not have pursued paganism, and ultimately we would not have been exiled. And so our sages are now saying that David, when he accepted Lashon Hara, the ramifications were tremendous. It wasn't just the punishment, the kingdom would be divided. It was the ultimate loss of the masses of the Jewish people. And this gives us great insight, A, to the gravity of the transgression of Lashon Hara. How careful we have to be. Someone comes and tells us a story, we have to be so careful. Had a very powerful story this month. A child came and complained about a teacher. He said the teacher kicked the kid out of the class. And when the kid left the class, the kid wasn't in the class. The teacher went into his knapsack and started looking at what he had and confiscated different things the child had behind his back when the kid was out of class. So that sounds like a very bad story about the teacher. You want to confiscate things from a kid, fine. You want to go into his knapsack and take things without his knowing, that's really bad. I was really upset. It was the third story I heard about this teacher. Okay, we verified the story more deeply, and there's another part to the story, which the child who told over the story did not tell. And that is that the child who was kicked out of class had told the teacher earlier, "I brought something to school I wasn't allowed to bring." And the teacher had reason to think he brought a knife. So when the teacher kicked him out of class and then he checked his knapsack, he had to know what was in that knapsack to ensure the safety of other children and that child himself. Suddenly it's a different story. You'd ask me, I would have still said he should have asked the child in front of him to empty out the knapsack. He wants to know what he brought that he wasn't allowed to bring. But at least it's not as severe as the first time you hear the story. So we hear a story, we're tempted to hear Lashon Hara, especially when it's not the first story we hear about this person. Ah, wait. Remember that the destruction of the Jewish people, and this is a recurring theme in our history. Adam and Eve accepted Lashon Hara from the serpent. He said, "You should just know that God is keeping you away from the most potent tree in the garden. If you had access to that tree, life would be a different life." He was right, not the way he described it, right? But he was able to convince them that God was working against their interest. He was saving for himself the best fruit. When they were willing to accept that version of the story, they were willing to eat from the forbidden fruit, but it began with Lashon Hara. It began with the ability of looking at the world and saying, "Oh no, God's keeping from me the most important fruit." And then it goes on to the story of the brothers, Yosef saying Lashon Hara, and that ultimately driving us down to Egypt. And then it goes on to the generation of the desert, where the spies come back and say, "God really has a bad idea for you guys. He's going to destroy you by bringing you into that land." And the people are willing to accept that line. So our history is replete with examples leading up to this example that brought about tremendous destruction to the Jewish people when people accepted Lashon Hara, when people were willing to believe Lashon Hara, and that's a very, very scary line, what we're learning here. Amar Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yonatan. We have the following quote in the name of Rabbi Yonatan. We've been learning for the last few weeks how Rabbi Yonatan tells us, if you think the sons of Shmuel transgressed when it says they slept with the women who came to the temple, it doesn't mean what you think it says. If you think, the next line was, if you think King David transgressed, it doesn't mean what you think it says. And then we learned, if you think Reuven transgressed, it doesn't mean what you think it says. We had a long introduction before we started the series, and now we're up to the final example of Rav Yonatan, which is about King Solomon, Shlomo. As the verse says, it says in one place that Solomon erected an altar in honor of the pagan gods. Certainly sounds like he transgressed an idol worship. But at the end of his life, what does the verse say? It says, "Velo haya levavo shalem im Hashem Elokav," his heart was not whole with Hashem his God, "kilvav David aviv," like the heart of David his father. If he was erecting altars in honor of pagan gods, that's not the way you would describe it. "Kilvav David avivu delohava." The verse is telling you he wasn't on the level of his father David, "michtana milochata," but the verse is clearly indicating he didn't sin. He just wasn't on that level when he should have been. "Elamanim kayem." So then Rav Yonatan says, what do I do with the verse, "Vayilet ziknat Shlomo nashavitu et levavo"? It says when King Solomon aged, his women, because the Talmud in Tractate Yevamos says he didn't marry them. When it says he had 1,000 women, it doesn't say he had 1,000 wives. The Talmud says he didn't marry them. So when King... According to Rashi, they were Kadeshas. So Machlokas had to understand that Gemara. Rashi says they were Kadeshas. Kadesh is the equivalent of a woman of ill repute. That King Solomon was intimate with them, but not in the form of marriage. Like a woman for hire. He had a relationship with them, which was short term and not in the holiest of manner. So that's how Rashi learns. That
In the Hebrew, like they have concubines, which is a very high status, right?
Right, not a concubine, not a pilegesh. Right.
So it's interesting because they're translated in English as wives.
Right. What does the verse say in Song of Songs? "Isha achat me'elef lo matzati." I didn't find a woman among 1,000. It doesn't say what relationship he had with the 1,000. Other commentaries say he wasn't even intimate with them. He just developed a platonic relationship with them to convince them to convert to Judaism. And that's, I'm saying, two opinions. Rashi's of the opinion that he was intimate with them, but never in the form of even a concubine. We see that the limit of 18 includes concubines. So it wouldn't have helped if they were concubines. So what do we do with the verse that says that as King Solomon aged, his women, that's why I translate it as his women, not his wives, caused his heart to veer off the path. "V'aktiv kilvav David aviv," so the Talmud challenges back. But the verse says that it wasn't as great as King David his father, but not that he sinned. So what do you do with that verse? Answers the Talmud. Hachi ka'amar, what the verse really means to say is that they tried to veer his heart off the path, but they didn't succeed. His wives definitely tried. He too. They worked to shift his heart. But lo alach, but even though they shifted his heart to go after other gods, he did not go after other gods. Talmud says, wait a second. But the verse says, "As yivne Shlomo b'malik mo shikutz Moav," that Solomon at that time would build an altar for Chemosh, the pagan god of Moabites. The Gemara says, yeah, it says, "livnot," to build, "shebikesh livnot velo bana." He thought about it, but he didn't actually do it. It says, then kings, they convinced him to build, but he didn't actually do it. He thought about it. He was convinced to do it, but he didn't do it. The Talmud says, wait a second. You want to tell me that when it says, then he was convinced to, then what about what it says that, "as yivne Yoshua mizbeach Lashem," then Joshua was convinced to build an altar in honor of God. The verse means, and he did build that altar. What are you going to do with that verse? You have to say that over there Joshua did build it. So over here also you have to say that Solomon did build it. Ela kedetanya. So the Gemara says, you're right. I got to give you a different answer. Rabbi Yossi says, v'etabamot shapnei Yerushalayim shomimin lar mashchit shobana shomomach Yisrael ashtarot shikut zidonim. He says, later on in Kings it describes how all these altars were wiped out by Yoshio. So Rabbi Yossi says, wait a second, we had pious kings, Asa, Yoshaphat. Why didn't they eradicate? If King Solomon erected altars in honor of pagan gods, where were all the other pious kings? Why does the verse describe how Yoshio eradicated those altars that King Solomon built? You have two other kings who worked very hard eradicating every form of idol worship from the land. Why didn't they do it? So he says, you're right. King Solomon never built it, and they never destroyed it. The pasuk describes it as his destroying it to tell you what credit he has. That Yoshio was willing to go beyond any of his predecessors to eradicate idol worship. Really, King Solomon didn't build it. The Talmud says, but then why does the verse say he did? The Talmud says, because his wives did, and he didn't stop them. And this is where the whole conversation began, where the Talmud had said a few pages ago that we are held accountable when our family members or when our close ones do things, and we are the ones who can stop them, and we don't, so then we're held accountable. The Talmud saying that's what happened here with Shlomo. That Shlomo's wives set up those altars. He could have stopped them, and he didn't. And that's why the verse quotes it as though he built it, because it is described, it is considered as though he did it. Rashi says in Tractate Sota, that when it says this type of line, that it's as though so-and-so did it, what it means to say is that the punishment in heaven is as severe as if he did the more weighty one. Meaning we saw throughout the last few pages, the Talmud says it's as though Shmuel's children slept with the women there. That means that their punishment was that severe. If King Solomon is described as though he built the altars, that's to tell us how the gravity of the transgression in heaven, and that the punishment would be so severe. And Shmuel says, Noach lo loto tzadik, that tzadik, Shlomo would have preferred, Sheyei shamash ledavar acher, to have spent time in his life cutting wood and drawing water for a pagan church, Val yikateb bo v'yas ha'ra b'enei Hashem, rather than have this verse written forever about him, where the verse says he did that which was evil in the eyes of Hashem. This was part of the punishment for King Solomon, that's how it's recorded forever in the Navi. He did that which was evil in the eyes of Hashem. Did he actually serve pagan gods? So the Talmud says no. The Talmud says it is described as though he did, because he's held accountable. His family members did. And he could have stopped them and didn't.
What did we learn from that? He made like these political marriages, and in order to not rock the boat, he allowed these people to do what they wanted to do. His alliances, I guess, because he's the man who built the temple.
Right.
So if anybody would be against this. So
it's very tricky. Yeah. Now we find that he marries Pharaoh's daughter, and then when his enemy Yeravam ben Nevat threatens his reign, Yeravam runs away to Egypt, and the king of Egypt gives Yeravam ben Nevat clemency. Your son-in-law is king, and he's threatening your son-in-law's kingship. There was obviously a problem there in that relationship, and we find other examples of that, that there were other enemies that the Egyptian king gave clemency to. So,
better off with his thousand women than with his 8 wives. I mean, in some ways, I mean, you know, they're just joking, but I mean, it's hard, and like you say, to have that in posterity.
The Talmud concludes and says that Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Rav Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel, B'sha'ah shenasa Shlomo et bat paro, when King Solomon married the daughter of Pharaoh, Hechnisa lo elef minei zemer, she brought in 1,000 different types of music, Ve'amra lo, and she started telling him, Kach osim la'avodat kochavim plonit, this music is used in this form of pagan worship. And this music is used in that form of pagan worship. 1,000 different types of music for 1,000 different types of idol worship. Velo michaba, and he did not stop her. He didn't say, we can't play that music around here. This is all part of the pagan worship. No. So he had in his house all kinds of music, which anyone who knew understood that that was a symbol of the pagan idol worship. So that's an example the Talmud tells us. Okay, we're out of time.